And now, ladies and gentlemen, born in Leeds. Now, illustrious London luminary. Inimitable, incomparable, audaciously irrepressible. Mr. Barry Cryer!
When Barry Cryer died in January, the comedy world didn't just lose a legend, but a mentor, a friend, and one of the last remaining Barrys in the wild. With his thick mop of silver hair and almost as thick black-rimmed glasses, it was like Barry had been so busy working for the last 65 years, he'd not had time to go from black and white into colour. The rumour was that Barry was born at the age of 52 and refused to go home from hospital until he'd finished telling the midwife a joke about a confused parrot. There was probably more to his early life than that, but this programme isn't a biography. Barry would have seen that as a waste of time that could have been spent telling jokes.
Well, I won't give you my full CV, my biography. You'd lose the will to live. But I was born in Leeds in 1900 and typing error. I'm a BA in Lit, failed of Leeds University, which is absolutely true. I failed due to the outbreak of the Second World War, which was 16 years before, but upset me very deeply.
So this will be a celebration of the man, featuring some classic clips from his long career, memories of him from his colleagues, and jokes. Lots of jokes.
Man's parrot kept swearing a lot, and he said to his mate, "It's driving me mad, this parrot swearing all the time." He said, "Stick him in the fridge for 5 minutes, he'll get the message." So he said to the parrot, "Are you going to stop swearing?" And the parrot said, "Why don't you?" He said, "No, get in the fridge." Closed the door, timed him 5 minutes, took the parrot out. "You're going to stop swearing?" And the parrot said, "All right." The parrot looked back in the fridge and said, "What did that chicken do?"
Barry was all about the jokes, telling them to anyone who'd listen, and writing them for everyone from Tommy Cooper to Richard Pryor, Spike Milligan to Dave Allen, via Kenny Everett, the Two Ronnies, and Morecambe and Wise. Barry worked with so many of the greats during his long career that for decades, he'd been the person the media turned to when any of them died. The late, great Jeremy Hardy put it best when he said with comedy, "Retirement isn't an issue. You just keep going until you're finally older than Barry Cryer and then he speaks at your memorial."
The adventures of after-dinner speakers are many and various. We all compare notes with each other on the circuit. There's one great story about the guy who gave an after-dinner speech and then sat down, and the man next to him said, "That's the worst after-dinner speech I've ever heard." And he was very upset. The man on the other side leaned over and said, "Take no notice of him. Got no opinions of his own. He just says what everybody else is thinking."
Known as Baz to his friends, Mr. Cryer to the hundreds of pub landlords he kept in business over the years, Uncle Barry to generations of younger comics, but to the actor and writer Bob Cryer, he was Dad. I asked Bob what it was like in the Cryer household growing up.
I think for me and my siblings, Tony and Dave, my brothers and my sister Jack, the abiding sound of our youth, of Dad working at home, was the clacking of the electric typewriter when he was working with people like Peter Vincent or David Nobbs, Dick Vosborough, latterly with Graham Garden, and trying to spot them through a haze of smoke, which for one period of Dad's life was pipe smoke.
Dear Kenny Everett, my friend, he always called me Bar, which is probably from the place he usually found me. And I always remember Ev said to me once, he said, "Ooh, Bar, you, married for over 30 years and 4 children, what a smokescreen." Now...
But I think for all of us, the general memory is of not an authoritarian father, not by any stretch, more of a man prattling about, usually in the kitchen, perhaps to a Wilson, Keppel and Betty routine with a tea towel. Or something he used to love doing was surprise knee grasps. We used to catch each other out with a well-placed grab of the knee. But chief amongst them, I think it's the thing that I will find it most difficult to get through a meal without remembering him, and that is the noble art of spoon hanging. Dad had a particularly well-shaped nose for this, but he would challenge you at the table to take your spoon, place it on the end of your nose, and see who could keep it on for the longest. And I think if there's any tribute we can pay to my father, it's to lobby for it to be a test event at the next Olympics.
And what a clever move it was from Barry to turn messing around with a spoon at the dinner table into messing around professionally for several decades, not least on a ridiculous Radio 4 panel show.
Et puis, je m'habille très vite, je sors de la chambre.
Je m'habille très vite, je sors de la chambre.
Barry's hearing problem means that he now has trouble hearing himself sing. Help is available on our webpage for anyone else who would like to have trouble hearing Barry sing.
Aside from the jokes, the main thing most of us remember about Barry's appearances on I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue is his laugh. Barry was one of the most generous laughers you'd ever work with, delighting in jokes from his colleagues, or more often, the ones he was telling himself.
Push, what Sean Connery calls his cat. Shrubbery, what Sean Connery says when he sends a chicken back in a restaurant. Shit, what Sean Connery says to his dog.
Any more of that, Barry? I'm calling the nurse.
We spoke to a few of the people that got to work with him on Clue. I say we. I didn't speak to them. I get enough of them at work. Here are producer John Naismith, Pippa Evans, Colin Sell at the piano, and Andy Hamilton with their memories of Baz.
My favourite memory of working with Barry Cryer, it's very hard to choose. There was so much laughter and so many stories. And so much mucking about, which I really enjoyed. But I particularly liked the fact that when I started doing I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, when Humph Littleton was in the chair, as soon as Humph reached the first really dirty innuendo in the show, Barry would always rise to his feet in mock outrage and walk off with his nose in the air like some stately dowager. And he did it in every show, and it always made me laugh.
In this round, I'll ask the teams to suggest innovations catalogue style descriptions for some older inventions that we might now take for granted. Barry.
Toilet roll. New from Thomas Crapper and Son. Crapper's Delight. Accessorise your water closet. No more dock leaves. No more asking the man next door if he's got 2 fives for a 10. That's all behind you, as is new Crapper's Delight. We put our business in your hands and vice versa. Experts agree it's the number one product, the Royce of Rolls. Try Crapper's Delight.
Hello, it's Pippa Evans here. And my favourite Barry Cryer joke was actually told to me by Barry at my first recording of I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, where before we record each episode of Clue, we tell a joke to the audience. But me being a sprightly young thing, I didn't have a joke, you know, in the sense of a joke. But luckily Barry was there with his Rolodex brain. So he gave me this one. Knock, knock. Who's there? Granddad. Stop the funeral.
Let's rock. Everybody, let's rock. Everybody in the whole cell block.
Slow hand clapping an old man is really, really, really. He's 40 years old.
Yes. So I don't know how long I've got. I don't even buy green bananas.
This is John Naismith, my thoughts about Barry. Barry was a Luddite. Anything computer-based was anathema to him. He did have an email address, but it was only accessed by his wife, Terry, and son, Dave, his head of IT. All his ideas were written on a packet of consulate cigarettes, or as he called them, his philofags. When I started producing, I'm sorry having to clue, the cast were actually allowed to smoke during recordings, and we put out ashtrays on the desks next to the obligatory glasses of water. On older recordings, you can occasionally make out the scratch of Barry's cigarette lighter amongst the mirth. Barry always said of his professional work, "It's the travel I'm paid for. The shows, I do for free." I can well believe it.
Providing piano accompaniment for this round, we have Colin Sell.
Well, I first met Barry when I joined I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue in 1975, and I was his pianist for his one-person show from about 1992, and it was a real privilege and a real pleasure. And, of course, it was wonderful to be on stage with him. So many laughs were forthcoming, but we had a lot of laughs off stage as well. So I'm going to finish, really, with not one of his jokes. This is just his favourite cartoon. It's a James Thurber cartoon, and I'd like to share it because he used to repeat it quite a lot, and we had many a chuckle. Two hippos in the river, and one turns to the other and says, "I keep thinking it's Thursday." Smashing. I shall really miss him.
Let's meet the teams. On my left, Barry Cryer and Graham Garden.
Graham Garden is Barry's longtime friend and collaborator, and I asked him for some memories of working with his beloved partner in comedy crime.
For the last 50 years, I've sat next to Baz as a team on I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue. It was the best seat in the house. I not only got the benefit of his gags, I was also enveloped by his laughter, that big, generous guffaw. He always said the audience enjoyed the show most when the wheels came off. That would often happen, and it would prompt one of Barry's grumpy ad-libs. "Have the visitors been? Nurse, he's out of bed again." And, "You are watching a family at war." Which always got a huge laugh, although I'm not sure how many in the audience remembered a popular TV series from 1970. I think the most fun we had was in the round sound charades, where over the years we'd developed a couple of fey elderly Scots characters called Hamish and Dougal. Here they are, in action, trying to guide the opposing team to guess the identity of the film Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo.
Five words.
Five words. It's a movie.
Off you go.
Hamish.
Dougal, you'll have had your tea.
Well, yes, I have. I've been taking tea and honey with Mrs. Nochte.
James, does she produce the honey herself?
Oh, no, no. No, that's not nature's way. She's got... she's got a hive on her allotment.
Oh, I had one of those once. Couldn't ride my bicycle for a fortnight.
Mind you, Hamish, mind you, it is the smallest hive I've ever seen. You wouldn't think she'd get a whole swarm in there.
She doesn't have a swarm, Dougal. Oh. She just has the one.
Well, that's funny. I haven't seen it around lately.
No. No, it's away on its summer break.
Oh, really? Where does hers go to?
Well, it has a timeshare in a holiday hive in Monaco.
Oh! Well, that explains everything.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Herbie gets stung by bees.
You're nearly there.
nearly there.
Herbie goes to Monte... No. He's...
Yes.
Baz used to say, in my business, you don't retire, the phone stops ringing. But with Baz, the phone never did stop ringing. If he enjoyed someone's show, he'd phone them up to let them know. And much like the Queen, Barry had his own birthday list, where he would call you up to share a joke with you for your birthday. As honours go, it was the equivalent of a knighthood, only with less chance of being injured by a minor royal with a sword. Though his tastes could be modern, his methods of communication weren't. He once joked that he was so old his phone had an Alistair SIM card. Barry much preferred to call people up on the landline, as Giles Brandreth recalls.
There were only three people who ever called me on the landline. I only kept the landline for them, my mother, Nicholas Parsons, and Barry Cryer. Well, first my mother went, then Nicholas went, and now Barry's gone. Barry, oh, he called me on the landline most days, usually with a joke. He wasn't on the line very long, the one about Picasso being burgled and how Picasso, to be helpful, did a drawing of the robbers, and shortly afterwards the police arrested a horse and two sardines.
I got a phone call on my way here tonight. I don't have a mobile myself, you understand. I just tell friends to ring round till they get whoever's sitting next to me on the bus. Set me to puzzling about telephones. When I was a kid, we had the first phone in our street. It took my dad ages to get it out of the box. There's an old woman in there using it.
Here's Stephen Fry with a memory of another phone call.
One of my favourite phone calls from Baz was many years ago. I'd been on a radio chat show. And the interviewer and I started talking about spoonerisms. And Baz rang up a few hours after it had been broadcast and said, apropos of spoonerisms, when he was script editor on the Kenny Everett video show, was it called? There was a character that Kenny did, you may remember, called Cupid Stunt, this American woman with plastic breasts. And after the second series, Barry said he was approached by, I think it was Bill Cotton, who was managing director of the TV at the time for the BBC, who said, Barry, the name of that character that Kenny plays, Cupid, I could barely bring myself to say it. How this evaded our notice, I cannot tell, but it must go, no longer. Do you understand? Barry said, yes, OK. And went to Kenny and the other writers and said, we can't call her Cupid Stunt anymore. And then in the third series, as some of you remember, Kenny's character was called Mary Hinge. And a few weeks after that was broadcast, Bill said to Barry, you see, no need to be disgusting. Much better. Thank you.
Aside from his family and friends, if there's one thing he loved as much as a joke, it was an audience.
How are you? How are you? Are you enjoying yourselves?
Yes!
Why? What are you doing?
While most comedy writers tend to prefer to stay behind the scenes and shy away from attention, sunlight, or human contact, Barry was a performer at heart. Not just a bit of a ham, he was a whole delicatessen.
I can't help loving you every time I hear you whistle. It makes my nylon bristle.
Barry Cryer there. And wonderful Barry can still reach those high notes. He just can't remember what he went up there for.
David Mitchell remembers working with Barry on one of his favourite episodes of the BBC TV show Would I Lie to You?
I have written and had published a trilogy of romantic novels under a female pen name.
My favourite memory of working with Barry was when, on an episode of Would I Lie to You, he was called upon to assert that he'd written a trilogy of romantic novels under a female pen name.
Ooh.
Okay, Steve. What's the female pen name, Barry?
Mary Windsor.
Mary Windsor.
Mary Windsor?
Yeah. And at what stage in your career was this?
Early.
So
Barry proceeded to invent a pseudonym, three titles and three plots of, as he described it, sub-Barbara Cartland page-turners. This was brilliant quick thinking, but what I loved most was the affectation of writerly pride with which he met our scepticism about the truth of his claim.
Become lovers, and then it became very tense and something, and then she became very autocratic with him. Mm. And it was a very moving moment, if I say so myself.
No, I just don't see Barry having the time to do it. And
I could write those drunk in the morning.
It was a lovely bit of comic acting. When asked which out of his three bonkbusters, My Land, 1 Year and Hasta la Vista, he was proudest of, he declared with enormous dignity,
the third one, because I was starting to get the hang of it.
Barry was performing on stage until the very end. He was even doing sell-out performances in Edinburgh with Ronnie Golden, where their combined age was about the same as all the other comedians on the fringe put together.
And now, a man who needs no introduction. He's snorted his synergogen. He's had his milky drink. The living testament to cryogenics, Barry Cryer!
Begin to zoom. Bam, bam, boom. Say goodbye to doom and gloom.
Barry never stopped being delighted by comedy, always encouraging to newer acts, because as far as he was concerned, more comedians didn't mean more competition. It meant more jokes for him to laugh at.
Show with a pick of the crop from the comedy circuit. I'm thoroughly enjoying this job. I love to see a young comedian make it. It's when more than one does I get nervous. But, you know, I used to have charisma, but it cleared up. They made me have a medical for this. I had to go and see the BBC doctor, and he said, take your clothes off, which I did. He said, get on all fours in the corner, and I did. I said, what? He said, I'm going to have a coffee table there, and I just want to see what it looks like anyway. And now our first act was described by the Guardian.
The main thing we'll all remember about Baz was the jokes. And specifically, as Joe Brand tells us, it was mainly jokes told outside by fire exits.
My favourite memories of Barry involve me and Barry outside a lot of different buildings, rain or shine, smoking fags and telling jokes.
As part of the Radio 4 programme Chain Reaction, recorded in 2004, Joe asked Barry the impossible question. What was his favourite joke?
I'm going to occasionally just bung in some little quick questions. What's your favourite joke?
Oh, one I told... Oh, this is... Yawn with your mouths closed. This is about 1955 when I was still at university, in a university show, and I still love this joke. A guy is driving down a country lane and he ran over a cockerel. And he was very upset, and he went to the farmhouse and knocked on the door, and a woman opened the door, and he said, I appear to have killed your cockerel. I'd like to replace him. And she said, please yourself, the hen's around the back. Now, you did ask. I still love it.
No, I like that one as well, and I'm going to be telling that.
He didn't just have a joke for every occasion. He had a mental Rolodex of them that he could flip to at the nearest hint of a suggestion.
Feeling a bit low, actually. Our granddaughter's hamster died yesterday. Fell asleep at the wheel.
Let's meet the teams. They are, on my left, Barry Cryer and Sandy Toksvig.
Well, I spent 5 hours on a train with Barry Cryer. I don't think he stopped talking from beginning to end. There was an awful lot of... Have I told you the one about... The joke I remember, but I will never tell it as well as Baz, and probably I've got it slightly wrong. But they often seem to start. A ventriloquist was lost in the Australian outback. Anyway, this Australian's lost in the outback and happens to spy a rancher coming along on a horse, and he says, excuse me, would you... give me a lift into town. And the rancher says, no, I don't want to. So the ventriloquist gets the horse to speak. And the horse says to the man, if you don't take that man into town, I am not going to go any further. Well, the rancher's rather startled by this, and so he allows the man to get up onto the back of the horse. As they're riding along, the rancher says very quietly, "That's amazing. Animals talking to you. Can I just say, if any of my sheep talk to you, they're all bloody liars."
Hello, it's Jan Ravens here. My favourite memory of Barry, well, it's when he used to ring up regularly after dead ringers and say, "Hello, it's your stalker here." And then he'd be so complimentary and really so enthusiastic about dead ringers and how brilliant all the writers were. He was such an enthusiast about all comedy. And then when you saw him in person, and he'd have that kind of long, slow blink and that smile playing about his lips, like he was always going to tell you the most amazing joke. And then he would.
Only the other day, I heard the story of the train in Northern Ireland. In our strife-torn world, it's lovely to have some warmth and mirth. And there's a man rushing down the train in Northern Ireland saying, "Is there a priest on this train? God's sake, is there a priest? It's an emergency. Must be a priest on this train. Is there an Anglican vicar? Anglican vicar. Is there a rabbi? Please, emergency." And the little man put his hand up and said, "I'm a Methodist minister." He said, "Oh, you're no use to me. We're looking for a corkscrew."
Barry Cryer leaves behind him a CV even longer than one of his anecdotes, and generations of fans who he kept laughing through their entire lives. But most importantly, he leaves behind him a lot of comedians wondering who the hell is going to speak at their memorials now. As so many performers have discovered over the past 86 years, it's probably best to leave the final words to Barry.
Barry.
On the sad subject of mortality, there's an old guy staggering home from the pub, and he slumped on a bench and he looked up and there was a figure wearing a black cowl carrying a scythe. And the old boy said, "Who are you?" And the figure leaned in and said, "I am Death." And the old boy said, "I said, who are you?"